Here in Colombia, the stage still rattles past red brick buildings with iron shutters and doors. And since the 1850s, locals still gather at the Jack Douglas Saloon to have a drink, swap stories, and listen to music. On this program, we'll talk about this music and the role it has played in maintaining the lifestyle, customs, and traditions of this small, rural community. From Motherlode Community Radio in Sonora, welcome to The Diggins, a living folk music tradition. I'm your host, Dave Allen. Both a California state park and a National Historic Landmark District, the Gold Rush town of Columbia retains its historic character both in its architecture and in the traditions of the people who live there. Columbia is not just a tourist attraction, but a place where people live. So for Columbia, it is not just a matter of preserving buildings, but in keeping the culture of the place alive. Dr. Thaddeus Hildreth and party discovered gold here in March of 1850. Taking advantage of the heavy spring rains, they carried the gold-bearing dirt in sacks to a nearby stream to wash it. The five of them averaged 15 pounds of gold a day for 3 days. 1 month later, Hildreth Diggins was renamed Columbia, a thriving tent town with a population of over 6,000. Until the failure of water in July, hundreds of prospectors were averaging 12 to 15 ounces a day each.
Had a dream the other night, dreamed I was in glory, sang and danced the whole night through, came home with the girls in the morning.
But that first year almost proved to be the town's last. The area had no natural streams, only gulches carrying runoff from rain and snow. As the creeks and streams dried up, so did the yield of gold. The scarcity of water needed to extract the gold forced mining operations to cease. But gambling, saloon keeping, and traveling musicians, a newly found source of amusement, prospered beyond belief and kept the town alive. By 1852, an extensive flume and ditch system had been built to bring water to Columbia year-round. Columbia became one of the richest gold fields in the state, and the town held the dual distinction as the entertainment capital of the Southern Mines.
But music was such a big part of the culture of the Gold Rush.
According to former park ranger and Columbia historian Sharon Grout, this was especially true in Columbia.
In 1854, there was music coming out of so many fandangos and saloons, and it was so loud that the town trustees finally passed a law, regulation, saying that no drums or trombones could be played anymore. Flutes, pianos, guitars, and fiddles were okay. But no more drums and trombones. They were too noisy. And the stores carried strings for various instruments. There's a letter from Benjamin Harrison, who had a store right next to the Oddfellows building. Only now it's not that anymore. And he writes to his daughter, who's sending him supplies from the East Coast, saying, "Okay, I need these strings now." He was like, "Okay, it's going to take 6 months for the strings to get there."
Oh, yeah.
You know, so is he ordering in advance, or is this a rush order? And just having a lot of music around, people are entertaining each other in the evening. There were bands. In fact, there were a lot of bands because there were a lot of dances. There were a lot of balls. There were the fire departments that gave New Year's Eve dances, or we're having a dance in February, and they would issue cards of invitation to the ladies and say, "If you need a ride here, this person is in charge, and we can make arrangements to pick you up and bring you to the dance."
We can trace the beginnings of the music performed and enjoyed in Columbia thanks to folk music collector Sidney Robison Cowell, who in 1939 showed up with her Presto brand portable acetate disc recording machine and made sound recordings of old-timers performing songs they had learned over the years. A blend of everything from reels to ragtime, the collection included novelty ballads from the Gold Rush, medicine show tunes, and Barbary Coast songs. Aaron Morgan was born at French Gulch in 1861. His father, Charles Morgan, came round the horn in 1849 and moved to Columbia with his wife, Anne, in 1856. In this recording, Morgan plays a fandango on the harmonica. A fandango is a traditional Spanish-American dance, but in Columbia, any lively celebration, or the place where it was held, was often called a fandango.
Tell them the name of it.
Oh, we want the name of it.
Yes, sir.
You
tell
the
name of it.
Be on the record.
You just look toward that little doodad.
Huh? You look right toward that and say what it is.
What before you play.
Before you start to play.
What's the name of what you're going to play?
Well, that would be Legend of Juliana.
Yeah.
Well, tell that. Tell.
That's all right. That
you look that way and say,
yeah.
The Mexican what?
Go ahead, I'll play it.
Just start the same as it.
Fandango
dance.
Hubert Brady was born in Columbia in 1879. He was the son of Matthew Brady, who came to California by way of the Isthmus in 1858. With his long white whiskers and pipe, Mr. Brady was often seen lounging in front of his old-timers clubhouse and museum downtown.
This song was used to be sang by an old Columbia miner. He came from South Carolina in 1849, mined here all his life, lived to be about 90 years of age. This is the way he always sang this. It's entitled "The Captain with His Whiskers." This is the way Tom sang it, as near as I can remember. As they march through the town with the banners so gay, I ran to the window to hear the band play. I peeped through the blinds very cautiously then, lest the neighbors should say I was looking at the men. Oh, the troops were the finest whoever did see, when the captain with his whiskers took a sly glance at me. When we met at the ball, I of course thought it was right to pretend I had never met before that night. But he knew me at once, I perceived by his glance. I hung down my head when he asked me to dance. Oh, he sat by my side at the end of the set. The sweet words he spoke I shall never forget, for my heart was enlisted and could not get free, when the captain with his whiskers took a sly glance at me. But they march from the town, and I see him no more, though I think of him oft and the whiskers he wore. Oh, I came to your city this night for to see a look at your great Union Square. I came for to ride on your electric streetcars and a wink at your pretty young girls. Oh, I'm old, but I'm awfully tough. Ha, ha. Oh, I'm old, but I'm awfully tough. And the girls, they all say, in their jolly old way, he's old, but he's awfully tough.
Crazy, isn't it?
Oh, that's the end of it.
Crazy, isn't it?
Oh, that guy sang that 40 years ago.
In his younger days, longtime Columbia resident John E. Stone sometimes toured with traveling medicine shows. He performs his pitch for Dr. Ridge's Food and then plays a couple fiddle tunes.
Well, this song, My Beautiful Baby, that's an old one.
Can I tell about where you learned that? I mean, what that was? You were telling me yesterday about that
thing. Well, it's an old song that was used by Dr. Ridge's to advertise his prepared food for the babies. Oh, when I was a single man, I had a single trouble. That was to find a single girl, my happiness to double. At last I found a charming maid, I thought her sweet as honey. But now we're married, I'm afraid she wasn't worth the money. No, because she makes me get up in the middle of the night to nurse the baby, who joined me in a vocal duet. He squalls and I sing. Did-dum, wake him up, put a little chap away to titty, and a piddle popper gets his pipe. You shall have your Ridge's food and bottle by and by. A Ridge, Pidgey, Ducky, darling, baby, don't you cry. Oh, when this baby boy was born, he seemed a little sickly. My sweet wife did not notice it, though I perceived it quickly. I thought we'd lose our little chap if she'd not do her duty. But thanks to Dr. Ridge's food, he's grown to be a beauty. Yes, I think Dr. Ridge is the best doctor I ever had in my life. He prescribed food instead of medicine, which brought the little chap through all right. Although I think I did a lot myself, singing did-dum, wake him up, put a little chap, wait a titty in a bit till Papa gets his pipe. You shall have your Ridge's food and bottle by and by. A Ridge, Pidgey, Ducky, darling, baby, don't you cry. She said she'd honor and obey, but that's just what she won't do. And do just anything I'd say, but don't you see she don't do. I'll light the fire, Eliza said, and get the breakfast early. But now Eliza lies in bed and laughs when I get surly. Yes, she does laugh at me when I get up in the morning to roast the fire. frizzled meat. Well, I don't mean that. I mean to get up at frizzled meat and roast the fire. Well, you know, I don't mean that either. I mean them all the time singing, dead, I'm wake him up. Put a little chap away to titty hit a piddle. Papa gets his pipe. You shall have your ridges, food and bottle by and by. A ridgy, pidgey, ducky, darling, baby, don't you cry. When young men talk of marrying, you cannot stop them in it. If they should ask for my advice, I'd say just wait a minute. Some say there's bliss in married life, and some perhaps there may be, but not if you've a lazy wife who makes you nurse the baby. Now when you have to get up in the middle of the night and nurse the baby, it's very middling. You'll say so too when you have to sing, dead-um, wake him up. Put a little chap away to titty hit a piddle, Papa gets his pipe. You shall have your ridges, food and bottle by and by. A ridgy, pidgey, ducky, darling, baby, don't you cry.
Okay, what's it gonna be?
Leather breeches.
Leon Ponce was born in the mining town of Vallecito in 1866. He is the son of Nick Ponce of Santiago, Chile, who came to California in 1852. His mother was Rosa Aria of Valparaiso, Chile. Leon moved to Colombia in 1894 when he married his wife, Nettie. Her father came to Colombia in 1852.
Party going on. I said, hello, Joe. He said, hello, good morning. How's the hogs? Oh, pretty good. He said, how's your family?
Oh, Farmer John from his work come home on a summer's afternoon. He sat himself near the maple tree and sang himself a tune. He sang till the cows came running up and around him from bearing. But I never heard good a farmer John before attempt to sing. This was a tune for their old holiday to sing in the maple grove. For their old holiday, dollar holiday to the tune the old cow died on. on the oldest cow in the farmer's lot. Tried hard to join the song. She couldn't catch the melody, the voice was loud and strong. The old farmer, he laughed till the tears rolled down his cheek like apples red. The cow was mad, she tried to sing till she rolled over dead. This was a tune for the old Alligator, sang in the maple grove. For the old Alligator, old Alligator, to the tune the old cow died on. Farmer John had an inquest held to see what killed his cow. The jury sat, the verdict brought, the cow was killed, but how? They said this cow would be living yet, and chewing a cud with glee, if Farmer John had sang that song beneath the maple tree. This was a tune for the old Alligator, sang in the maple grove. For the old Alligator, to the tune the old cow died on.
Leon Ponce's son, Al Ponce, was born in Columbia in 1901 and was raised on the family homestead off Italian Bar. He talks about life growing up in Columbia during an interview conducted as part of Columbia College Library's Oral History Series.
Some of the old fellows, sometime we get together, my sister and I, we talk about the old fellows that we knew used to mine on the rivers, used to come up by the river, you know, walk up. Come by the house, stop and have a drink of water. Maybe one old fellow in particular just loved buttermilk, and we happened to be churning butter that day. You know, he'd sit there and drink maybe a gallon of buttermilk. You know,
wow.
Yeah, they all had cabins on the river. You know, and they had all the old burros. You know, and sometimes there'd be maybe a couple of fellows come through the country. You know, and have four or five burros, and all their belongings were on the burros. You know, and they, go down to the river or somewhere and mine for a while, then they move on somewhere else. It was just their way of life, you know. Of course, those fellows, you know, at that time when I grew up, see, the mining had dwindled down quite a bit, and they took practically all they had to could make, you know, to make a living, you know, besides going to town all nights and hooping it up and everything. Well, there was an awful lot of local trade, too, you know. The City Hotel was open up there, and the Douglas Saloon, and of course, that time, the Stage Driver's Retreat, they called it, you know, and then down to Fallon House, that place was open, the hotel was open, you know, and the bar was open. And in the evenings, summer months especially, there's benches out in front of the hotels, you know, and bars. The town's full of people, you know, sitting around in the summertime, people going up and down the street, local people, you know, within the county, you know, all around. Everybody sitting out in front of the hotel, you know, and talking, going to have a drink and come out. And they used to have house parties all over, you know. And maybe this week we'd go to somebody's house, maybe be 15, 20, 30 people would come to the house. Everybody'd bring something to eat, and take up the rug in the living room, and we'd dance. We used to have lots and lots of fun, you know, and
Al's sister, Mabel Ponce Draper, was born in Columbia in 1895.
Well, my dad used to pay another party. Oh, yeah, Papa used to pay that party. He could pay any tune that he heard on it. He just did a lot of Italian dancing. And once he was over at Bellacito, where he was raised, you know, there was a lot of Italians. Well, then get to Saturday night, you could come into town and purchase whatever you wanted. They used to have benches along the street where people would sit and visit in the evenings.
Woody Guthrie came through Columbia in 1941. In his letters to Alan Lomax during his stay, Guthrie writes detailed descriptions about the town and its people and his experience there. Here are excerpts from a letter he wrote to Lomax, dated January 22, 1941.
You know, this is a good country with a history to back it up. Everything around here is an antique. I asked an old hard rock miner how long he'd been around here. He pointed out across the mountains to some big old high trees, and he said, "You see them there trees over yonder?" And I told him I did. And he said, "Well, boy, when I hit town here, them pines was just a pretty fair-sized weed patch." Well, some of these placer miners have been around the bar, and they can throw a string full of bull further than that. Yeah, that's right. I like this country just fine. And as far as the music goes around here, I'm enjoying the shortage of it. I don't mean that like it sounds, though. I mean, I'm glad to be where you don't hear one of the jukeboxes a-going full blast through every window in town. They got a little dance hall right here across the street. And they got a band of some kind in there that ain't no good. And a tramp musician is almost a welcome guest out here. The saloons in some of the mining towns around here are fixed up with them nickel boxes, but I walked into them and I've asked the boss man, how about knocking off a few tunes to pick up a steak? And seen him turn that nickel box face to the wall and tell me to do the best I could.
You're listening to Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. Coming up next...
That would be the Jack Douglas Saloon, so that was Al and Frances. Frances mm-hmm. Ponce, it could have been. She had a gray hair, and she would put knitting needles in her hair or pencils. She also, if people were misbehaving, she had a hat pin in there. She'd pull out the hat pin and just do a little needling.
Well, we were in the kind of shady part of town when they had the big trees that were wonderful and they shaded the street. And so all summer long, it was really a wonderful place to be. And the musicians would come down to that section of town. And there was a lovely couple, the Holmbergs, Betty and Roger, that had the cheap cash store that were very enthusiastic also about the musicians. And so it was a real conducive place for that to happen.
From the studios at KAADLP in Sonora, you're listening to Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. Welcome back to our program. I'm your host, Dave Allen. We'll begin with longtime Columbia merchant, Janice Nelson.
In 1945, when the state of California started acquiring the different properties in Columbia, and it officially became a state park, they had promised to the citizens of Columbia that it would remain a town and it would remain a community for the people, not the other type of state park that had a toll booth in front of it, you paid and came in. And so they had promised that in 1945. And most of the concessionaires were people that lived in town. But the town at that time was populated with citizens that had been there for a long time. My husband's family's business started in, they purchased it in the 30s, but it was established in 23. So next year, our business will be 100 years old, and it's a confectionery business. We make candy at the Columbia Candy Kitchen. And our grandmother, she lived in the Tibbetts house and had been there for a long time. And the Martinez house in back of hers, the Ponce family. And these were people that were very rooted in Columbia, and they were the ones that had the businesses.
After Prohibition, Leon Ponce Jr. and his wife Pearl bought the Jack Douglas Saloon and operated it as the stage driver's retreat until he retired and sold it to the state. Al Ponce, with his wife Frances, would bartend for his brother on the weekends. In 1968, the building was closed for restoration, and reopened under its original name, the Jack Douglas Saloon.
Then they had the Jack Douglas, Pearl and her husband, before another owner came and restored the, changed it from the stage driver's retreat, and was totally put back to who supposedly J.B. Jack Douglas was. So they were trying to put this place back as much possible as it was in the mining days, you know. And it caught a lot of people's spirit. It caught a lot of musicians' spirit, like Billy Mack and different people, that and Rick that played there. But also I have to tell a story of one time there was a contest of who could back their horse through the bar and not knock over a chair. And so these were wild events that went on at the Douglas. And the Douglas had this great 49er spirit that came through with the people and the music and everything.
Tom Cornette originally agreed to manage the Douglas on a temporary basis, but ended up staying, running both the Douglas and another saloon in town, the St. Charles.
I agreed to manage the Douglas for a year in 1972. That was in August of 72, and I've been off and on for the next, 16 years. Well, music in the saloon was happening when I took over. That was Billy Mack and the Wagon Wheels. He would play every Saturday, I think it was Saturday afternoons, yeah. Well, they used to also play at the Angelo's Hall on Saturday nights, a big dance Saturday nights in Angelo's Hall, and that brought people from all around.
Peter Larkin bartended for Tom Cornette. He remembers hearing Billy Mack and the Wagon Wheels on the local radio station, broadcast live from the Douglas.
Because I remember just driving up here to visit, you get about out of Oakdale, and KVML would be on the radio, the AM radio, and Billy Mack would be playing live. And then he used, when I started bartending for Tom, Billy Mack again played on Saturdays.
I'm just a plain old country boy, drove a big truck the most of my life. I double clutched that rig 100 times around the world to make a living for my kids and my wife. Well, I done a little guitar picking, played around from bar to bar. But now they call me a double clutching guitar picking radio star. Well, I come on strong from 7 to 10 with a country western DJ show. I got about 1,000 cowboy friends that hear me on the radio. But I'm just a plain old country boy, do a little picking on the guitar. Now they call me a double clutching guitar picking radio star. Truck moved into the motherlode land. I got a job at driving a high school bus. Got a good little western band. We got a dance hall job and a radio show. We got a good name near and far. Now they call me a double clutching guitar picking radio star. Yeah, I come on strong from 7 to 10 with a country western DJ show. I got about 1,000 cowboy friends that hear me on the radio. On a guitar, but now they call me a double clutching guitar picking radio star. Yeah, they call me a double clutching guitar picking radio star.
The Wagon Wheels featured local talent Rick Carter on lead guitar. Nelson remembers another musician that often played with Billy Mack,
and also one of the youngest musicians, and I think he played on the streets, but also in the Douglas Saloon, was Dave Cavanaugh, who I think he was like about 13 or 14 years old when he was playing in the saloons. But he was so incredibly talented. Nobody could believe that this young man could do what he did on a banjo.
Yeah, he would sit in. He would sit in sometimes with Billy Mack or some of the. He was just in town. He was a local boy, so he was in town every weekend.
When Billy Mack would be playing, and people like the stage driver Zane Orr, he would stand up and he would sing.
Zane Orr did that. So, Zane was quite a character with that because he would get. He had this one song, "My Broken Heart" or something like that. And he would pull out this red bandana and just make a big production out of crying and weeping and wiping his face.
When Cornette took over the Douglas, Al and Frances Ponce were still bartending there.
They were in their 70s at this time, and they had been working at the Douglas when I came in as a manager. And so, and they stayed there through 79, as long as I had it.
Mm-hmm.
She always... Yeah, she wore the big old dresses, the apron. She had a hat pin through her hair. That was the terror of town. And she would not be beyond. I mean, I remember several times she'd say, "Tom, these people just stole a scuttle." And you know, we had these big glass scuttles, so they'd take a scuttle out. She would actually go out the front door and run down the street after them. Yeah, no, she was wonderful.
Peter Larkin remembers Alan Francis Ponce bartending there.
Al Ponce started he retired from PG&E in 1965, and then he started working for his brother at the Douglas in full time in 65.
And how about that rattlesnake collection that used to be there? Well, they used to have a contest with the PG&E ditch tenders, because Al was a ditch tender, okay, walked miles on the ditches.
Right.
And whoever caught the biggest rattlesnake that year, they would put up.
Columbia was, well, the Gold Rush days, the early Gold Rush days, before the Comstock took over, were just wild, crazy times. And Columbia exemplified those in a lot of ways. But under control, you know, well, most of the time.
But, somewhat. Yeah. There was a wedding once upon a time by a native son, Gilbert Morrison, who happened to be the local garbage man, so everybody knew him.
He owned the business,
and he owned the business, and he eventually sold it, but he ended up getting married to a woman, and they had and he was a smoke poler, and he was one of the famous black powder rifle men in all of America. Wow. And he was very handsome in his buckskins, fringe buckskins, and his raccoon hat and everything, and the smoke polers would get together. And so he got married at the Church of the 49ers, and everybody had to come in dress of the period of the 1800s. And the smoke polers came, and when he came and his bride out of the church, they had their guns all in the air, and they jumped on this wire spring bed together, and people hauled them through the streets of Columbia to Angelo's Hall, and they had an unbelievable music fest that whole evening, along with the authentic food that would have been served at the time, with tin cups, drinking out of tin cups and eating pasties and things. And that at 2 o'clock in the morning, it closed and the party moved on to the Douglas. And it stayed in the Douglas for 2 days, going on and on and on. It was just lots of fun. It had the spirit of the Gold Rush.
At the same time, just down the street from the Douglas, musicians started gathering under the shade of an old elm in front of Bill's Barbershop to jam.
We're just playing for donations this afternoon, so if you like this old-time music, you can help us out by putting your donation up there in the old bullpen. Here's a tune featuring the Epilogue, one of the oldest instruments known to mankind. It's called Bye Bye Blues.
Bill Davis was known in town as the singing barber. When business was slow, Davis would sit in front of his shop and perform with his friend, fellow old-timer, Pat Clark.
You know, I was wondering about Pat Clark. He was my neighbor. I'm not sure about this, but he may have been playing music in the street before things really started happening around 71 or 2. I think he played the fiddle, as I recall. Maybe not. But he did sing, like Minnie the Moocher was one of his favorite songs. Yeah, he loved to entertain.
Sharon Grout and Columbia docent Diana Newington recall them playing on the street.
Yeah, well, and then there was, what was it, Bill Davis, the barber. The barber.
And Pat Clark.
And Pat Clark. And Bill played the gut bucket and the banjo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Pat and would sit out on the bench in front of the barbershop, and Pat Clark would come over. That was his song, Minnie the Moocher.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Minnie the Moocher.
Davis welcomed and encouraged these young musicians, and they all remember him fondly years afterward. Sam Greenberg remembers the first time he showed up with his fiddle in front of the barbershop to play.
Well, I remember first coming there, and it was such a trip. I had never been anywhere like that, and we just walked up and just put down our cases, opened them up, and just gathered in front of the elm tree that's in front of Bill's barber shop. But one of the things I do remember is Bill the barber talking to us, and that barber shop had been in continuous operation for 140 years. And he was only the third barber. So each barber had about 40 to 45 years of tenure.
Yeah.
And it had been a continuous operation. It was an old barber shop, and it had an iron bathtub in there, or I'm pretty sure it was just a tin bathtub. And it was bare with a heater, and that's just pretty much like it had been for 150 years.
When musician Dave Shapiro, known for his long ponytail, decided to cut his hair for a job, Bill Davis turned the event into a local legend.
There was a barber for many years named Bill Davis. Bill had hair parted in the middle and all greased and a waxed mustache. And he had a washtub bass in there. He had a little stand where he hung cheap mandolin and a cheap four-string banjo. And he would occasionally play these instruments. And he would let us, he loved us because we played music, which he liked. So he would let us keep our cases in there when we weren't playing. And he was a great guy. You know, he really was nice to us. And we would play in there, and different musicians would come by. Like Rick Carter would play. Rick Carter, who is now gone from this earth, was a really, really good electric guitar player, playing in a country style. And he was in a band called Billy Mack and the Wagon Wheels, which occasionally Dave Cavanaugh would sit in with that band. I think I met Dave when he was about 17, something like that. Getting back to Bill Davis and the haircut. So I go into Bill's barbershop, and he takes photographs of me before he cut my hair. Then he cuts my hair and takes photographs after he cut my hair. And for many years, he hung those pictures in the window of the barbershop, which I'm sure you remember. And it said, Dave before, and then Dave after.
Other signs that often adorned the barbershop window advertised legs shaved, two for the price of one, and bald head special, 50 cents. Casey Winstead describes a prank Davis would pull to warm up a crowd for street musicians like Tim Armacost.
Okay, now the barbershop, see, now Bill Davis, everybody had a friend in Bill Davis. Okay, so Bill Davis was the barbershop, and so it was a real barbershop, and that's where I got my haircut. And he used to come out, and he would play. He played the banjo too, but he played the old, he didn't play frail or finger pick, you know, he played the old kind of Tin Pan Alley kind of banjo. And even, I think Pat Clark used to come down there too, and they used to sing, And they'd sing all those old Tin Pan Alley kind of songs. So Tim would hang out there, and he was, this Bill Davis was real friendly to Tim and real friendly to everybody else. But it was really quite a show because Bill Davis used to do this thing. He would do it with me, and he'd do it with other regulars. Is he'd set you up like he was going to shave you and everything. And then he'd go get the steaming towel, but he'd act like the steaming towel was too hot and he couldn't stand it, and he'd bring it out and throw it down on your face, right? And then you'd kick your feet up, and all the tourists would just howl, you know? And then that was perfect. That was the setup, and then Tim would go out and play for him, and they were all so Bill Davis had primed the pump with his antics, you know, at the barbershop. And he used to call people in to come in and watch the haircuts. And he had Joaquin Murrieta's finger in a box, which of course was just a wooden box with a hole in it so he could put his thumb in it. And so he'd open it up for the moms, right? Open up the box, and then he'd wiggle his finger, and of course they'd jump out of their skin when he'd do that. So Bill Davis, the barber, and he was all dressed up, you know, in a costume for the streets, you know, and he had the garters on his long sleeve shirt and everything. So he'd prime the pump. He'd get everybody up in a good mood, and then Tim and maybe some other musicians would go stroll out of the barbershop and start playing and, you know, really rake in the coin.
Musician Bob Tagney recalled one of the barber's favorite pranks.
A lost finger, a three-finger jack that he kept in a box. Yeah, he did it. He used to pull that prank until a woman stepped back and tripped on his dog and fell down, and he stopped doing that.
Pat Clark, he was a banjo-strumming, handsome guy with a mustache, and he sang Minnie the Moocher and things like that.
A true showman, Pat Clark had the ability to involve the audience, getting them to join in and become part of the performance. Chris Stevenson would often perform in the street with Pat Clark.
And I think the state built the gazebo trying to get the musicians to come play on the gazebo, but you couldn't make as much money because it was a stage and people wouldn't approach you. The thing about street music is you're approachable. But it is called the Pat Clark Gazebo. That's one character. So when we started playing there with Sarah and Dave, and there were all kinds of characters there, including Pat Clark. He was a cool Australian gentleman. Entertainer, he was like, he did old music hall kind of things, and poetry. He was always hanging out at the barbershop with Bill Davis when we first started playing. And then when we moved up the street and started playing in front of the City Hotel, he would play with us there.
The rest of the story. Listen, ladies. Oh, a good man's kind. You always get that other kind. And just when you think that he's your pal, you turn around and find him messing with some other gal. And then you rave, you really rave, to see him lying down there in his grave. So if your man is nice, take my advice. Love him every morning, kiss him every night. Never have a headache, honey, treat him right. Because a good man nowadays is hard to find. One more time. Oh, a good man is hard to find. You always get that other kind. And just when you think that he's your pal, you turn around to find him messing with some other gal. And then you rave, and then you rave, to see him lying down there in his grave. So if he starts to wonder, you don't know where he goes. Spend his money and burn all his clothes, because a good man now days is hard to find. Come on, everybody. It's hard to find. You always get that other kind. And just when you think that he's your pal, you turn around and find him messing with some other gal. And then you rave, you really rave, to see him lying down there in his grave. So if your man is nice, take my advice. Love him every morning, kiss him every night. Never have a headache, honey, treat him right. Oh, a good man. Now, days is hard to find. You bet your choo-choo. Oh, a good man. Now, days is hard to find.
I've kissed many girls under many conditions. I've kissed girls both with and without their permission. But there's never a one for a moment compares with the girl that I kissed in the dark on the stairs. We met with a bump, 'twas a sudden sharp turning. They'd kindly forgotten to leave the light burning. We met with a bump and taken both unawares. Somehow or other, we kissed on the stairs. For fully a minute, she clung to me tight. Then up on the landing, some fool struck a light. And swearing the softest of feminine swears, she kissed me and left me alone on the stairs.
Very nice.
I'm going to throw you out in a minute. Last night, I held a hand in mine. It was so small and sweet. I thought my heart would surely burst. So loudly did it beat. No other hand unto my heart could greater rapture bring than that little hand I held last night. Four aces and a king.
Hen house on my knees.
Whoa, Mona.
And I thought I heard a chicken sneeze.
Whoa, Mona. Achoo.
Well, he sneezed so hard with a whooping cough.
Whoa, Mona.
Then he sneezed his head and his tail right off.
Whoa, Mona. Oh, Mona, you shall be free in the morning. Oh, Mona, you shall be free. Oh, when the good Lord sets you free.
Now as I was driving down the road.
Oh, Mona.
With a tired nag and a heavy load.
Oh, Mona.
Well, I cracked my whip and the lead horse swung.
Oh, Mona.
And the wheel horse busted the wagon tongue.
Oh, Mona.
Oh, Mona. You shall be free in the morning, morning.
Oh, Petra,
you shall be free. Oh, when that good Lord sets you free.
The barbershop is now gone, but Pat Clark's signature song, Minnie the Moocher, can still be heard performed on the street some 50 years later.
One, two, three, four.
Well, folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red hot hoochie coocher. She was a tough old Harlem frail, but Minnie had a heart that was big as a whale. Heidi, 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 hi! Heidi, 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 hey!
Hey, 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 hey!
Widdly, 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 woo!
Widdly, 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 woo!
I like you!
I like you too!
Me?
Me?
Oh. I forgot to tell you this one part. When I say what, you say beer. Beer, yes. What?
Beer!
That's it.
named Smokey. She liked him though he was a cokey. He took her down to Harlem Town and he
hung her out and kicked the gong around.
Heidi, 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 Heidi! Around with the king of Sweden. He had some things that she was needing. He gave her a million in nickels and dimes, and then he must have counted it a thousand times. Heidi, 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 ho!
Heidi, 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 ho!
Heidi, 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 hey!
Heidi, 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 hey!
I'm gonna buy the band a beer!
I'm gonna buy the band a beer!
What?
Beer!
What I'm talking about. Now here's a unique little solo I developed for this.
Right. Woo!
Well, got to tell you this part. If you've seen Minnie,
if you've seen Minnie,
she's tall and skinny,
she's tall and skinny.
Well, tell her that Cokie Joe,
Cokie Joe
was here, but he had to go. What?
Yeah.
And as he departed,
as he departed,
the curtains parted.
And
there stood Minnie, stark naked, kicking the gong. Oh.
Listening to Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. Coming up next.
I remember the first time I basically saw Tim Armacost walk down Main Street and stand there and play. And he looked like one of those miners that had just walked out of the mines. And he came down the street. The only difference was he had a musical instrument he was holding. But other than that, you know, you would think that he had just walked out of the mines. And
yeah. But music was always the cohesive factor in the whole thing. Everybody just loved music.
Yeah.
No matter if they've been drinking or not. They just love, you could go there and get fully entertained in the town of Columbia pretty
Still
much any time. Yeah, pretty much any time.
Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. It's a production of Motherlode Community Radio. Funding for the project was provided by the California Arts Council. From the studios at KAADLP in Sonora, I'm your host, Dave Allen. Thanks for listening.